I guess in some respects it was exactly the same as up at their place, but the opposite way round. So there, we played well for 22 minutes up there, which was the last 22 minutes, and this time we played well for the first 22 minutes here, or 26 minutes, whatever it was. And yeah, it was like the Alamo, wasn't it? And I guess we'll come on to some of the points a bit later on, but some big tactical deficiencies there from my point of view.
Yeah, Ian, your thoughts on just a quick resume of the overview of the game?
Yeah, I thought we were good. First 25 minutes, got on the front foot, passed the ball, looked a bit inventive with Palmer coming in and playing little slip balls, and nice through ball from Molson, step over from Semenyo, and then we just stopped playing. Now, whether you put that down to Huddersfield being a good team, they are mid-table. You know, they've got 31 points off of 26 games, which isn't that great. But they were the better side for 70 minutes. And in the second half, we didn't play at all. And I saw it coming at the end of the first half, because we just seemed to, I don't know whether we ran out of legs, whether they outnumber us in midfield, but we just stopped doing all the good stuff we were doing. We stopped.
It stopped. It literally stopped, didn't it?
We did something else. So why? You have to ask the question, but you know, it's difficult when you're not down there and you can't see the whole pitch, and you're in the stand, and I think others sort of made some tactical changes and all the rest of it, and got a player out the back three into the midfield, and they just seemed to overrun us. I think Viner was a bit worried about tackling anybody after he'd been booked. Stupid tackle by Pham. He was lucky to be on the field.
We'll come on to that when we go through the detail. I was going to ask Dave about that one. Let me come to you next, Mark. Quick thoughts on the game overall.
Well, after 26 minutes and those two goals, you know, with the two great, great through balls, Huddersfield looked there for the taking. They were playing a high line, and when we got hold of the ball, looked like we could slip the ball through. But, you know, I remember seeing Semenyo with his head down, and when he really could make a quick forward pass, he would dwell on the ball, and that stopped it. And then the chances just dried up after about half an hour. And Vallejo, Bakuna and O'Brien just poured through, and it was chance after chance. And in the second half, I mean, they must have had about 20 shots in the second half. They finished up with 27 shots on goal.
27 in total, yeah. No,
The writing was on the wall in the first half when O'Brien picked up the ball, ran into the box completely unchallenged with four of our blokes jogging around him, and I'll put it that way, because nobody tried to tackle him, and then Bentley tipped it onto the post.
Did you notice, Ian, it was exactly the same spot that we conceded a goal against Portsmouth, when the guy ran from the edge of the area. This time he ran past Viner, the other time he ran past and then got down the side and played the ball back across. This time he just went for the goal. I think we were lucky he probably went for the shot, because if he'd have played the ball across and somebody had followed it in, maybe they'd have scored. But to be quite honest, I mean, the amount of shots that they had, and they were pouring in. I think we were left a little bit disjointed by Tommy Rowe's injury, when he fouled their player and aggravated an injury. But really, it was desperate stuff for the last hour of the game. I've never seen such a one-sided contest, and we were very, very lucky.
But we won. Dave, let me come to you for a couple of early incidents in the game. I say, Ian's already commented on that run from O'Brien, but that was after a bright start by us. I think Naki Wells put a header just wide early on, and then Dijou, though, some referees would have sent him off for that challenge on Bakuna, wouldn't they? It was not in a dangerous area, non-threatening, but the foot was high. Would you have seen that as a sending off, Dave?
I think we'd all be sat there and thought, if that was the Huddersfield player going through Pham, we'd been baying for a red card. It probably was, I think. It certainly was orange, bordering on red. And I think the fact that it happened in the third minute probably helped Pham. I think if it happened after 20 minutes, he'd have been gone, because it wasn't a good challenge. And I don't think we'd have had many complaints if he'd got a red card.
And yeah, it was stupid, and it was reckless, and it was unnecessary.
The thing is, he does that a lot, though, Ian, doesn't he? He does. He's got this urge sometimes. I mean, the game against Charlton last season when he got himself sent off and we got out of jail, and then against Millwall when he was only on for what, quarter of an hour, with those two stupid challenges. Why? I don't know why he doesn't.
VAR
would have reviewed that in the Premier League and he would have gone.
He'd have gone. That's the sort of challenge that Semenyo did against Derby, which was, you know, one of his early games last season. I mean, Dave, and I'm going to come to Ian in a moment for the first goal, but Dave Palmer, he actually had it about in this evening, certainly for the first 25 minutes, and he did a great ball out on the right to Mariappa, whose cross was as abysmal as the ball was good, wasn't it? Yes, do you remember that one early on?
Just before? Yeah, I do, just a little knock inside the fullback and Mariappa on it, and I'm thinking just pull this across along the floor, along the 6-yard box, and one of our two strikers will get a tap in, and unfortunately got it all wrong. But
And if Jack Hunt had been there to receive it, do you think it might have been a better end product? Because I'm not convinced by Mariappa, to be honest, but you know, what do you think? Jack would have made better use of it?
Yeah, I think Mariappa should have, to be fair. I don't think there was much excuse for that. I think he's a steady right back. Defensively, I'm not sure he's nowhere near as good as Jack Hunt going forward. But you know, he's been brought into cover bases because of injuries. So I didn't, you know, it's the rub of the green, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, City's early play, early inventive play, Ian, got the goal it pretty much deserved, which was on the 22nd minute. Talk us through that first goal, because was it Mawson or Callas put that ball through?
Mawson. Yeah. Mawson put the ball through, pushed the ball through, nice step over from Semenyo, and Pham went off, and he was played on by either one of the fullbacks, take your pick. But he went through, great finish, and that's the kind of form he's in, and that's why he needs to get better service than he's getting.
Yeah. Mark, the City were buzzing a bit then. The second goal came within 4 minutes. Take us through that one as you saw it. Another good play by Palmer, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, Cal Palmer brought the ball down about 20 yards out to the right of the goal, and he just played the ball deliciously through inside of Naby Sarr. And the forwards, they're on, you know, if they're on their toes. And he hit the ball from the right hand side of the area into the bottom right hand corner. First time, it was a sweet finish from Amara. He could have easily played it across to Naki Wells, who was, you know, sniffer on the other post. But he hit it sweet, 2-0, and it looked like the game, you know, we were going to add to it.
It was in the bag, wasn't it? You know? It was in the bag.
It looked like it.
Yep. But then the shape of things to come came on 31 minutes with, we'd had the earlier attempts from O'Brien, and then Sarr headed one wide. But, Dave, when Rowe went off 5 minutes before the break, I don't really think he's just a good pro, does an adequate job in that position. I don't think it rocked us too much. In fact, Jack Hunt came on, and the first thing he did was had the ball off the line as Huddersfield gave intention of what was to come in the second half, didn't they? But your thoughts on Rowe and that Hunt header, that was expert positioning by him.
Yeah, I guess it's slightly unbalanced us with Mariappa having to go to left back and then not having a natural left-sided player on that side. But I don't think Rowe going off was the momentum change. I think it's, you know, you've got to give credit to Huddersfield and Corbyn for changing things. And you've got to give our guys a lot of discredit for not picking up and reacting to it. And
Are you talking about our coaches or our players? Our coaches.
Coaches, but you also want your players on the pitch to solve problems, don't you? I think that's the buzzword, isn't it? And I don't think we did that. And, you know, Huddersfield, all through the game, made purposeful, committed runs, and they run at pace at you and they commit people forward. And it's one of those games where, had we got the third goal, we could have gone on and got five or six. Because
we almost did get that third goal, Dave, didn't we? At the start of the second half, Pham put it through, and it was a poor first touch from Semenya, wasn't it? Because that would have been it then, game over, wouldn't it? Just that one.
They play on the edge. You know, that's the way they play. It's you know, you've got, if you look at Leeds and you've got Bielsa and, you know, Corbrand's his disciple to some extent in this season in the Premier League, they've played on the edge as well. You know, they play everything at full tilt, and if it comes off, they're going to be great. And if it doesn't come off, they're going to get, you know, they're going to concede some goals. And that was a bit like the first half today. But what they did, they committed men forward, and we didn't commit to going with them as well. And we didn't also slow the game down a bit. We had, I think, about 5 minutes, but I think Andy Vyman mentioned it in the commentary in the second half, where it looked like we just took the sting out of it, because everything, they dragged us into playing quick as well. And there was a couple of times early second half where I think Semenyo almost went through and it bobbled off his shin. But then he almost went down the right-hand side again, and we gave away sloppy touches, and we let them come back at us, and we let them come back at us. And I think that's where we're weak as a side. We don't know how to close a game out. And, we struggled second half.
I'll talk a bit more later about tactics. Yeah, do you think Kallas exudes enough as a skipper, an inspirational skipper? Because you can't fault Mawson or Kallas today with their performance, but, you know, do you look like Lewis Carey used to be? We talked about this in a game earlier this season we had a game against Southampton years ago, but we were really up against it, and Carey almost by himself seemed to pull the side together. Do you think Kallas is lacking a bit in that respect as a leader?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't know if you were going to come back to me then. I just
thought Kallas is a leader by example. All right, well, let me go to Ian. Not about Kallas. Ian, let's look about, look, this pressure was building. The goal that made the match even more a knife-edge affair came on 58 minutes. Aaron and Mbenza, if that's the right way to pronounce it, combining, and Bakuna in Benza. Anybody at fault for the goal, Ian, or just a reward for their pressure?
Well, it was coming, wasn't it? I mean, you couldn't look at that game and think, well, you know, who's going to be the next side to score? Oh, I think it'll be City. Because the only way we were going to get one was on the break, and Semenyo fluffed that on Saturday. Unlike he did on Saturday, I should say. So, I wouldn't necessarily fault anybody for it, but it was... They were having a field day down both flanks, really, in the second half, but particularly the left, because we keep pulling in narrow and giving players 20 yards of space and asking them to cross the ball. So go on, cross it. See if someone can head it in. Go on, have another go. Have the ball, but have another go. Go on. And that's what we keep doing. And it's not this game. It's every game. And particularly... Norwich, I mean, their two wing backs must have felt that all their birthdays and Christmases had come at once, because they had a field day and they had so much space to have a field day. They didn't have to be any good to have a field day.
No.
We
just retreated, and we didn't even close them down. We literally they were just lining things up. I mean, after the goal, I've got Toffolo. He set up Campbell, who should have scored. He put that one wide in his prime 10 years ago. That would have gone in. And then Vigello.
Vileko on the right one.
Vileko, is it? If that's the right pronunciation.
Yeah, Vileko.
Hit the bar. And then Dan Bentley, you know, he is the best goalkeeper in the Championship. He needs to be. That save mark from Bakuna on the 88th minute. Not a top draw effort, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he hit it with a bit of whip, Bakuna, to the centre. He got his knee over the ball, executed very well. I think it was on the rise a little bit, so it was helpful to the keeper. But reaction saves, he's fantastic. I think he just sometimes, I think he's getting better in the air, a lot better in the air than he was. Dan Bentley, I think he's the best goalkeeper in the league. If he won, there's no way we'd be in this position at this stage of the season, David. Yeah. So we got him to thank. But there was a, just before those chances, when they brought Nadj on and Martin, there was a little lull, and we just seemed to be slowing the game down a little bit. I remember Mariappa won a free kick on the left. It looks like we weathered the storm, but yeah.
No, they just come in. They just come in and come in. I mean, Dave, what did you think of the substitutions? They came on the 64th minute. Martin and Nadj coming on for Famara and Naki. I expect Famara was a bit peed off that he wasn't given a chance to get his hat-trick, although the way we played, you couldn't see him getting a sniff. But your thoughts on the substitutions, Dave, and the timing of them?
Yeah, I might have done it a little bit earlier. But no, I think we had to change it, and you know, we needed fresh legs, whether they were the right people to come on or not. I don't know, but
we went kind of like 4-5-1, 4-3-3, didn't we? And as Mark said, we had a 5-minute spell where we took a bit of the sting out of the game, but that was it. And then it was straight back on us again. You know, I wrote down better shape. And then just as I wrote that, that was when Vallejo hit that 35-yarder against the
bar. Oh, it was cracking. I needed to focus on that a couple of times because it almost looked different angles. Did it hit the underside? I thought there's no stanchion at the back anymore, but it was a funny one that you think, how did that come out? Because it sort of hit the bar and went straight down, didn't it?
It came down and it had so much spin on it that Bakuna could only hit the ball down into the ground.
Right,
and I think and he hit it away. There was he couldn't control the ball because it was spinning so much when it bounced back. So we were lucky. The only sniff that we got in the second half actually was their keeper Schofield almost made the same mistake as he did on Saturday against Watford. I don't know if he saw the goal that they conceded. I mean, I thought he was having a cup of tea. He waited so long for a back pass.
Yeah, it was awful, wasn't it?
Nipped in and scored. But he was lucky he was next to the post when Semenya ran in, and that was the only sniff we had in that second half, wasn't it? The only one on 75 minutes.
I mean, Ian, stats, you can't get away from the stats. I mean, 64-36 in their favour for possession, but that doesn't really mean a lot. 27 shots against our 4, 6 on target against our 2, 13 corners against our 0. But one statistic that I picked up that somebody put on OTIB, the last 12 matches, we've had 95 shots on goal and we've allowed the opposition 195. Now, the fact in that last 12 matches, we've won, what, is it five or six of them? We're winning matches. But, Ian, 195 shots allowed, more than 100 than we've had. That's the how many times do we say it? It's the bloody midfield all the time, isn't it? Yes?
The problem that you've got is that everything we do is bang average. Right? We've got a bang average attack, an attacking record. We've got a bang average defensive record. And for me, we've got a poor midfield.
Mm.
And I'll keep saying it. If you look at it, I'll give you a stat. We've got a goal difference of 0. Yeah. So we scored 27 and conceded 27. Now, if you want to know why Huddersfield are where they are, they've scored 29 goals, but they've let in 37.
Mm.
And I think the difference tonight was, if they'd had our front two, I think they'd have probably scored 6. And if they'd had our middle two, we probably wouldn't have scored.
Yeah.
So that's where we've got a bit of quality and a bit of edge. And we should have for what we paid for it. I mean, that's 28 million quid worth of centre halves and nigh on 11 million pounds worth of centre forwards we started with. So let's not scratch our heads and wonder why. But when I look at it, that I don't see the organisation. I mean, we've won more games than Middlesbrough and more games than Bournemouth.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, when we play, I was going to say we don't play badly and win, but we did tonight. But what we can't do is draw a game. When things aren't going well and we concede, certainly if we concede the first goal, we struggle. And that's the problem. And it's only additional players coming in and, I don't know, possible change of coach that's going to change it.
Yeah, let me ask
Dave. No, I'm not saying it should happen, but I'm just saying that's I can't see it changing otherwise.
Let me come to Dave about the statistics and this business about shots made and shots allowed. That's what it boils down to. But before you answer, I want to pick up somebody's put on there. They've not got a name, it's just a code. Can we enjoy the win, please? Yeah, and this was what I think Hampshire Reds said about me on OTIB. Oh, you're negative, 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 negative. We're not, as Dave's put here on the text in response to that, we're here to discuss the game. I've just said, and we've said collectively, cracking goals. We've also said that Dan Bentley is one of the best goalkeepers, if not the best in the championship.
No. Yeah, he's the best.
He is the best. And we've also said Callas and Mawson are looking like a centre-half combination that is worth 30 million. If we had 30 million quid worth of midfield players out there, we might be saying the same about our midfield, and then we wouldn't be getting overrun. So all those
did you see the clearance that Mawson made when Callas made a back for him, And somebody said it was like Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah.
And he swept the ball away.
But Dave, I've just got that off my chest because we're positive when we need to be. We were positive after the Millwall game and we're positive about the 3 points and everything. But Dave, the statistics, something fundamentally wrong when you've got that imbalance between shots made and allowed, isn't there?
Yes and no, I guess. It depends on where those shots are coming from, you know, where you're positioned as defenders. And, you know, earlier on this season, we conceded a lot of shots from outside the box because actually teams didn't get into the box to threaten us. So if teams are taking 25-yard shots and they're getting blocked or, you know, they're comfortable saves for Dan Bentley, you know, that's fine by me. You know, and if they outnumber our shots 2-1 because we create more gilt-edge chances, I'm pretty happy with that. If teams get desperate and want to take shots, that's fine. Tonight, obviously, was very different and in fairness, it's been very different for quite a while now. And we've started to concede more threatening shots, if that makes sense. And that's the bit we've got to cut out. We allowed them to get in too easy there. And I guess the biggest observation for me today was for the first 25, 30 minutes, we played as quite a tight team. And if you looked at our lines on Robin's TV, you could see all 10 outfield players on the screen at one time. Okay, and that normally means they're within, and you know, I've said it before, they're normally within 30 to 35 yards front to back. And therefore, when you lose the ball, you haven't got so far to bloody get it back because you're not that far away from anyone. And you could play as a bit more compact team. Mm. But then where we started to go wrong, and partly this is Huddersfield, as I said, because they started to commit players forward and put players, let's call it wrong side of our players, to make us stretch the gaps. And that's, you know, Corberan's theory, isn't it, in terms of giving his centre-backs then loads of time on the ball to kind of probe and push wide or, you know, get it to the full-backs. But the start of the second half, I shouted at the telly several times, we had a goal kick, or we had several goal kicks. Callas and Mawson have gone short for it. And they press us, and we can't take that goal kick. So what do we do?
Well,
then launch it 60 yards down the pitch.
Yeah.
Whilst Callas and Mawson are still ambling their way outside the six-yard box. So you've got a huge gap. And if the ball drops down, suddenly Viner and Backinson in particular have got huge areas to cover, and they've overloaded those areas and they've committed us. Zizou and Wells are too far forward. And I said to Ian before we started this call, I thought Wells did remarkably well with balls into him, head and chest down tonight. I thought he hit the ball really well on occasions. But boy, did he get some crap service tonight. And boy, did he make a lot of those passes and bailed us out considerably, in my opinion. But what we should have done, if you can't go short, what do? You reset and you think, right, we're not going short. Let's get the centre-backs up the pitch 40 yards. Our centre-forward is 10 yards into their half. And all of a sudden, we're closing that gap to 20 yards. And we didn't do that tonight. And we just played into their hands. And they won possession in the holes. And they exploited us. And to me, that is
coaching.
Basics. And that is poor from our professional guys to have not picked up on that.
It's naive then, isn't it? Yeah.
You just waste time if necessary. So I know I'm ranting about this, but by the time Callas and Mawson get up to within 10, 15 yards inside of our half, you've wasted another 10 seconds. You've taken a bit of sting out of their attack. And we didn't do that. We just turned it over and let them come on us after wave after wave after wave. And I don't think that's acceptable.
No. Ian, let me get Ian to come back in on that. That's an in-depth review of the tactics there from Dave. Ian, I mean, what are your, you know, we're supposed to have two accomplished coaches and a nice human running things on the pitch. You know, I mean, that Dave sums it up very well there, doesn't he? You know, it was just naive and it was embarrassing to watch it the way we surrendered it. I had a friend of mine from London who'd been watching it somehow. I think he's working in a broadcast studio. And even he said, how did you, you know, so what happened to you for the last hour? You know, and he changed the formation probably two or three times.
Hear me. Yeah. Finished?
Yep.
Right. It's not just shots, it's crosses. It's almost like we're doing defensive practice. Right, you have the ball and you just cross it. Right, you keep crossing it. And we'll see how many we can head out. Go on, go for it. And we, there's crosses, it's shots, and it's all because we're back in our own penalty area or edge of. And you can't play like that. Against the better sides, they had 27 shots tonight and I think 6 on target.
Mm.
You know, you do that against one of the better sides and they'll have 27 shots and they'll have 12 on target and they'll score with 4 of them.
Yeah, no, so absolutely you, right, Ian.
You've got to find a way to get hold of the ball. And when we had the ball and when we attacked in the first half, we looked a pretty good side. The first 20 minutes... Yeah,
100%.
You looked at that and you'd have thought, well, they're not a bad side, Bristol City. You know, why are they where they are? Well, I can see where they are because they're tearing Huddersfield apart and they got two sharp lads up front. Then, if you'd have gone out and come back in, you'd have think they swapped shirts.
Yeah.
Because it just... And it's not the only game we've been like it. Go back to the Derby game. Derby come, they're bottom of the league, and I think they had something like 65% possession, if not 70. And we keep doing it. So I'm worried that the coaches we've got haven't got the answer to it. And I can't see what they're doing to improve it. I mean, obviously, the first 20 minutes, yeah, thumbs up, very good.
Yeah.
But you can then...
penetrative passes as well, because the way,
yeah,
I mean, the way that lad who's a youngster, wasn't he, that O'Brien, ran into the box. I mean, there was one part in the second half, and Mark might remember this, when Semenyo was going forward, and I think the commentator said, "Why has he stopped?" Because we see it as though we advance into territory, and then we think we got to go back, we got to go sideways.
Well, what we were doing great in the first half, and when Dave said we were playing compact, is one and two touch football in triangles. So we, you know, it was pass, man, you know, offer a pass, a man in possession, move forward, pass, break the lines, doing that consistently. We stopped doing that in the second half, but the major problem we got is we just can't tackle in midfield, and we gave away so many fouls deep inside our half. I mean, we were just very lucky that Huddersfield didn't make anything of it. I mean, we thought we got over that Saturday. We didn't give those free kicks away against Millwall, you know, where they could stick their big men up. And I think O'Leary had flapped it one cross, didn't he, from Smith, when he tried to push him back into the goal with a header late on. And
There was a header from the midfield lad on Saturday at Bursar. O'Leary brilliantly saved down by the foot of his...
Yeah, he headed it down. Yeah, down by his near post. Apart from that one, but
right.
Tonight it was just the crosses were just relentless. But it's our tackling in midfield. You know,
we sound like a broken record going on about midfield. It was interesting that they brought on a lad called Pritchard, who we've been linked with, not long enough on to
Ex-Spurs
youngster, and then good old Richard Keogh, you know, despite his embarrassing situation that happened at Derby, he still puts in a decent performance, and you know, he's the sort of player that
he drives them forward, doesn't he?
Just a bit. I don't want to dwell too much on markings, because we've got a new way of doing it now, where you go higher or lower and just shout it out, and I'll take the view, and if I think that the higher is higher than what I've given, the two people, three of you shouting, I'll go higher. Right, Dan Bentley.
Are you going to say good game as well?
Good game, good game. Well, it was a good game for 20 minutes. Right, lads, Bentley, I've given him an 8.
Agreed.
Agreed. Freeze.
Agreed. Yeah. All right, okay, you're supposed to go higher or the same. Stick. Say stick.
Same, stick.
Right, I'll do the back four as a... No, I won't do it as a collective. I give Mariappa and Rowe and Hunt, because Hunt and Rowe sort of one player basically today. I gave those 2/3 6.
I gave Marepa 5, and I gave Rowe 6, and I gave Hunt 5. But
okay, all right. Callas and Mawson, they did their job. I gave them both a 7.
Higher.
Yeah,
both 8s.
Both 8s, okay. Yeah, okay. In the middle, I've given Semenyo. Yeah, I know. Across the four in the middle, I've given Semenyo 6 because he did do the dummy. Higher or lower?
Lower.
So, 5. Lower.
Right, 5. So 5. Right, we rank Semenyo 5. Palmer, I've given him a 6 because he did that great pass out of Mariappa where he scuffed the cross and he set up the goal and he's actually looking like the player that we paid £4 million for.
he worked really hard today, didn't he?
Yeah. All right.
Lower, so, I would say 5. Lower, just appear okay. In the second half.
Right, 6, all right. 6, right. 6 for me.
Okay, and then a 2 in the middle, because that's what they were. They're meant to be the anchor players, Viner and Backinson. Sorry, I've given them a 4, both of them. That's not 2 each. I've given them 4 each. Because I thought they don't seem to gel as a unit. Well, they don't tackle. They've both got the stance of a bit like, remember Carlton Palmer? We've said this before. You know, they've got a physical presence. But they don't put it about in there in that way. So higher than a 4?
Yeah, I deliberated on
stick.
I'd give them 5s or 6s. I thought they were let down by the 3 guys on the touchline today. I think they were hung out to dry in there, really.
Who are the three that you're talking about? The coach. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the wingers because I thought, where's the third one?
No, I think he's quite right, but I think you have to face facts that we haven't got 2 players at the club that can play in a 4-4-2 or as it turns into a 4-2-4.
Yeah.
We just haven't got those players.
Yeah.
So you need to do
something. I think we saw first half. We have Ian. That's the thing. We have
first 20 minutes, Dave. I'll give you that.
Yeah, first half hour, we play some good football.
First 25. Look, we scored the goals inside 25 minutes. So Dave's right.
Yeah.
Up front, just to finish on that topic, up front, I've given Naki a 5. Higher, lower?
6.
Higher. 6.
Okay. And then I've given Pham an 8 because he scored 2 goals. You can't take that
one.
Yeah.
He's in the shop window, isn't he?
He's in the shop window. We're going to come on to Twentyman versus Ashton. We're going to come on to Twentyman versus Ashton. A couple of things I want to say. Vyman, he ain't no analyst, is he? He hasn't got a future sat on the sofa.
He's very passionate, isn't he?
Well, and then Ian, you said about Peter Trigo. Is it Trigo or Trago? And he's sort of kinder. And he's wearing very fashionable suits, isn't he?
Well, that's a modern disease. It's like the right disease. That's another one that's coming. It's closely followed the so disease. So if I'm making a point, I say to you, Ashton Gate's a really good ground, right?
Right.
It's come from America. And I've actually tweeted to CNN about their anchors and their contributors because they're at it all the time. Trigo, didn't he play cricket for Somerset?
I don't think
he's very good.
No, I think Lisa Knights is better, to be honest.
Well, Lisa Knights used to work for Sky, so I mean she's a pro. In the nicest sense of the word. Whereas I think he's trying to make his way in the world. Don't get me wrong, I don't give a monkey's what kind of suit he wears. That's his personal.
Yeah, I was trying to turn it down, but they didn't have a volume control for that.
Well, I know he got a set of speakers when he bought it, but I don't think he's very good. The thing that I hate most about. And it's not just Robbins TV, it's the people who do the pictures, is that they will show replays of nothing. I mean, Huddersfield almost scored in the second half, and they were showing a replay of a ball going out of play.
Yeah, that run through by Campbell, wasn't it? It was hacked clear by Bentley.
Yeah, and stop it. Stop. And I don't want to see any more pictures of Dean Holden. Right, I know what he looks like.
Yeah.
And, oh, you know,
but he was talking to his coaches. I mean, Tomo said on it, I think we all agree that left back is now a real problem. He said, thoughts on potentially giving Vince Harper a debut. That's one for you, Dave.
Isn't he at Bath? Is that right, Dave?
Have they brought him back, or is he?
No, he was at Bath, City, wasn't he?
I don't think he's at Bath. I think he's with the club. But I've literally seen him.
He's probably not.
On the bubble now because we're twice weekly testing. Bubbles out the window, guys. So
twice weekly testing everybody. Does anybody know how the under 23s got on at Swansea?
They won 2-1.
And how did Joe Williams get on? Anybody know?
They won 2-1, but I don't know how anybody did individually, who scored the goals or whatever.
Right. Okay, look, let's move on.
Can we just go back to one more stat? David. Sister Lisa mentioned me at half time. Apparently, up to tonight, the 9 previous games where we've gone 1-0, we won. So that's 10 in a row.
Well, it just shows the importance for us of the first goal. Right, the big topic this week was the appearance, after much complaining, of Mark Ashton. I think he was smoked out by his comments made to the Sky reporter, and he wasn't going to be left to just ignore all of us here down in Bristol, as he called us on the interview last night. That sort of thing doesn't bother me, because there is only one team in Bristol, so let's call it us. I'll let you all have your say on it individually, but what I would say was that Gregor sort of buttered him up, but to coin what somebody said when Margaret Thatcher was in power and when she was laid into by Geoffrey Howe, it was like being savaged by a dead sheep. I thought Jeff's interview last night, he was no dead sheep when he was going for Ashton. So I'll come, just give your thoughts. I'll come to each of you in turn so you can have your say, what you thought, and then we'll discuss individual bits of it. But come to you first, Dave. He put his head above the parapet twice in a week. He talked about all the things that we've been talking about. So your thoughts on how he came across. We'll ignore Gregor's interview because I think we talked about that last week. But Jeff and Ashton, how did you see it, Dave?
As a general interview, I thought it was, a good interview, giving us lots of information, appeared to be quite open. But I think as City fans and those of us that, follow what's going on and listen to other people, I think there were some quite big inconsistencies and misalignment with other people in the club, which was quite interesting. I thought there was for those of us who have seen enough or heard enough of Mark Ashton, I thought there was his usual self-promoting, and I'll kind of stop after this point, but I can't possibly tell you the sensitivities of players' contracts, paraphrased Mark Ashton. But actually, because I can make myself look good, I'll tell you that I've got a sell-on clause for Adam Webster and Josh Browning.
Yeah.
Whereas he's much more vague on some of the other stuff that might not paint him in a good light. He's there to self-promote. So that's my initial thoughts.
Yeah. Ian? He's a master of words, isn't he?
Oh, he'd make a great politician. There's no two ways about it. The thing that I'd like to know is, we've offered FAM a really good contract, right? And we've more or less made our best and final offer. Now, I'm not to say that if he came back and said, I'll sign a 4-year deal if you give me another grand a week, that we wouldn't do it. But we're about at that stage. I got two things to say. Number one, we should have been at that stage a year ago. You don't let it run down to the last few months and then start doing this. He said the reason he couldn't offer Liam Walsh a new contract is because we didn't know what the revenue was going to be, and we didn't know that. That's okay until you then say, well, hang on a minute, and 20 men didn't pick up on it. You've offered FAM a contract and you don't know what the revenue is.
And you've offered him, so say, one of the best contracts ever offered to a City player, which if you say, who would you say has been the highest paid player at Bristol City in the last 5 years?
Thomas Callas.
So And what do we reckon he's on? 22, something like that?
25.
So but you're almost saying...
No, hang on, wait a minute. Let me finish. If you can either offer them both a contract, not knowing what the revenue is, and I get it. I mean, they will know what some of the revenue is. They know what they're getting in the solidarity payment from the Premier League. They know what they're getting off the EFL. All they don't know is, will they be allowed to get fans in the ground? So they won't be able to judge what their season ticket revenue is at the nth degree. But they'd have a rough idea, because I think if they do what they do normally and put the season tickets on selling March or May or whenever it normally is, you will get people who will buy, who will go out and buy a season ticket. So those two things don't gel. And you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, we don't know what money we're getting, but we've offered FAM a contract. But we're not offering Liam Walsh a contract, because we don't know how much revenue we got. The two things don't gel. It's either one or the other.
Yeah. Before I let Mark have his say, I mean, it's interesting you say about season tickets going on sale in March. I mean, I'll ask you this question, Ian. Have you booked a holiday for September? Because I don't think anybody's going to be buying season tickets in March, just like most people won't be booking holidays for August and September, which is when the next football season starts. So,
well, I've got a holiday booked in the end of April, beginning in May. And I've got another 2 weeks booked, end of September, beginning of October. But that's a timeshare that I've got.
Yeah. All I would say is then, if you do the first one, you're likely to be, I don't know if you're flying out from Heathrow, but you'll be staying in the Holiday Inn at Slough for 10 days after you come back then, won't you?
Well, I'm flying out from Bristol, but we don't honestly, you know, we don't know. None of us know. Would I think I'll be going? Probably not, would be my guess. But I'm hoping that at least some fans will be allowed back in the ground for the start of next season, which is normally second week in August.
Yeah, we hope. We really hope. We do want to be back. Mark, your shout on the Ashton Twentyman interview, your thoughts?
Well, going back to what Ian said, I mean, he did miss an opportunity, because he was really hounding him about Liam Walsh. You know, why isn't he signed? And Ashton said, oh, well, referred to him as Walshy, and said, we spoke in the last 4 weeks. He's really settled in Bristol. He wants to stay here. And that went on to that. What I thought was quite strange is why we have to send every player to Solihull to be scanned. Why don't they have the facilities in Bristol to do that?
You can't blame Mark Ashton for that. That's no. Medical.
Well, you don't know, because he comes from Solihull. What you're alluding to there, Mark, is why are they going all the way up there? And because Mark Ashton
does he know a consultant,
and that's why they're going up there. I mean, no, what I would say, and I speak this as somebody who had medical treatment 6 years ago, right? You go where the best people are. And sometimes if those consultants have been in Harley Street or something like that, but I had an operation done at that hospital, the spire they're going on about, in Solihull, because the best person for what I needed doing at that time was based there. Yeah, fact. Yeah, so I give him a free hit on that.
The other thing that came out was that Chris Brunt, when he signed, didn't move to the area at all and had to travel 100 miles, you know, every day to get to training. Apparently, he had a driver, but I wouldn't say that was, you know, that didn't come over very well. You know, that's obviously going to tire a player having to do that every day.
But generally, can I just say there, sorry, Mark, I'm not picking holes in your arguments on there, but just looking at the practical side of it, Chris Brunt, if he lived in Birmingham and let's say he lived in Bromsgrove or somewhere like that, he's on the south side of Birmingham, and that's just about on the cusp for doing a daily commute. Danny Wilson never brought his family down, and I'm sure we could go through managers. His family lived up north the whole time. He lived in a flat. Yeah. So
yeah, I just don't think it's all the Tomlin stories.
So these are sort of like red herrings. Dave, let me come back to you on the one thing that didn't get probed in depth was this business about injuries and performance coaches and everything like that. Do you think that was probed enough, or were you satisfied with what came out on that matter?
I think,
I think it's a slightly, you know, futile thing to keep digging on, because you're never going to come out and say our medical team have been unprofessional and they've cocked up, is he? You know, yeah. I think you could pose the question, but I think it's one of those ones you just have to kind of accept that, you know, yeah, they're looking into it, whether it's an external or internal review. You know, that's for the club to do.
Yeah, it's none of our business.
They're never going to be open about things like that.
Well, Dave, it is our business because we're stakeholders in the club.
But if you believe that, Ian, then fine. I genuinely believe it.
I don't want to know what's wrong with them. All I want to know is why we've got so many long-term injuries and other.
Well, they've told you that they're looking at it, Ian. You ain't going to get any more information than that, are you?
Can I just ask the three of you? Is there anything they could have done with the conditioning of the players' muscles or whatever to avoid as many hamstring injuries? Because there just seems to be a huge number of hamstring injuries we're having. Could they have not? I suppose they're not avoidable because they happen so frequently. But could they have done anything to avoid so many?
I don't know, and I don't suppose either Dave or Ian really know, because none of us are physios. We're not watching what they do day in and day out. You know,
no, it just seems like a lot of hamstring injuries.
It does.
It does.
If it continues, you know, if it continues into next season, then, you know, anyway, he put his head above the parapet. He did his usual spiel and thanking the Lansdownes and everything like that. But for me,
they were thought of as the best chairman, English chairman in the division. I think that's probably right.
I think that's probably right. Yeah. They are the most sensible. I mean, you know, you have to wonder though how Norwich City do, and I know they got parachutes, but how did Norwich City do what they do when they got a bloody cook as a chairperson? You know, because what is it that they've got? Okay, we get pretty much the same sort of crowds as Norwich are getting now, but you know, we seem to spend a lot of money in every aspect of the club and don't achieve as much as the expenditure deserves, in my opinion, for what
but,
that's
but doing. On the other hand, we don't throw money away and do what Chancery and Morris have done. It's Sheffield Wednesday and Derby, and try and beat the system, because I think, you know, what they've done is quite awful, and I don't think Steve Lansdowne would ever put the club in jeopardy that way.
Dave's made a comment about Norwich. Dave said a comment here. They have a proper head of recruitment. Now, is that guy that the camera...
Stuart Webb, isn't it?
Stuart Webb.
I think he went from Huddersfield, didn't he?
And somebody,
he went from Huddersfield to Norwich, is that right?
That's who you meant, Dave, wasn't it? Stuart Webb. And it's interesting, somebody put about managerial failures and what have you, and somebody put about Koppel and what have you, which was probably one of the few times that we have pushed the boat out in terms of signing a manager. Part of the reason he failed was that he wasn't allowed to bring Nicky Hammond as his director of football. Wally Downes did the training ground stuff. Nicky Hammond did all the off-the-field stuff. And Nicky Hammond, you talk about quality people, Nicky Hammond is now, he was a bang average goalkeeper, a bit better than Mark Ashton ever was. He actually played first-team football. But Nicky Hammond is now director of football operations at Celtic. Yeah, not some two-bit club. So that showed the value there. One thing that perturbed me this week was when they were talking about the Football League loans, the EFL loans, the £8 million, and Cardiff City going for one of those. Are they going to use that to pay off the Emilio Sala fee? I mean, guys, what do you think of that as indicative of the behaviour that they exude over there?
The thing you should pick up on is the fact that the day before they signed a right back from Crewe called Perry Young, who we were linked with. And then they say to, because you can't use these EFL loans to buy players. That's what you can't do. It has to be spent on wages, et cetera, not for new players. So they do that one day and they go out and get, ask for the £8 million loan the next. Now, yeah. I don't know if it's a given that you get it or you have to have all £8 million or whatever, but Derby will be at it next. I mean, you could... If you look at other clubs, and that's why you very rarely hear me criticising the Lansdownes, apart from one thing, and that's in their selection of managers. But look at Derby. They are paying Wayne Rooney £90,000 a week, so just under £5 million a year as a rookie manager. But they got a young lad up there, 16, that they're selling to Liverpool for £3 million. So if I was the people buying that club, I'd be thinking, well, hang on a minute, are you telling me we can't get a manager for under £5 million?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, for a rookie manager, it's absolutely ridiculous.
No, but they bought the name, just like they did with Frank Lampard and what have you. I mean, we've said on here, we've been saying it for a couple of months, this other than for FAM, the special one, this non-entering into contract negotiations with any player, by the sound of it. The players aren't knocking on our door, and we're not going to the players saying you want a contract. Is this part of Project Reset for the summer with football finances, Dave? We talked about this before, but do you think that's evidence of that as being fact now, that we're keeping our powder dry for another 4 months?
I think there'll be a large element of it. I don't think we'll want to commit ourselves. I know FAM's got a couple of goals tonight, and I know he's scored a few recently, but if it was me, I wouldn't have been making him the best contract offer we've ever offered a Bristol City player, or one of the best. I'd have been selling him in the summer, and probably even possibly last Christmas I might have been thinking about it as well, thinking I don't want this guy to go down to his last year, because Mark Ashton knows hold on. And if Mark Ashton knows FAM and he knows his agents and his representatives well, he'll know what FAM's angling for, and that's a shed load of money, and he'll probably be prepared to walk. And that's the risk we've now got ourselves into. You can reply on that, Ian, if you want. That's my view.
Yeah,
you must have an offer.
I agree with you. We should. The problem with all these things is post COVID. We should have got all these things sorted. Now, you might say, yeah, but now we've got COVID, we'll be able to pick up the players for a lot less. Well, so will other clubs.
Yeah.
And the other clubs might be in places where, Jack Hunt might want to go back to Yorkshire. Tommy Wynn.
Yeah, if they went, are we that bothered about it? And we are better financially equipped, even allowing for Lansdowne sustainability. We are in a better position than a lot of other clubs. So is Jack Hunt going to get a better contract with either of, Sheffield United wouldn't have him, but is Jack Hunt going to get a better contract at Sheffield Wednesday if he wanted to go back up north? Right, you've got to look at his options. Where is Jack Hunt going to go, if you take him as an example? Where is Pato going to go that he could better his existing terms than he's on now at Bristol City? And there are stages. Who's going to take him on?
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Well, we will.
The other thing we got to look at seriously is with this devastating loss of match day and commercial income for Championship clubs, that's going to last up to next season, because there's no way, I can't see his fans being re-admitted till September, October, until everybody's got the jab. They'll be pushing for a salary cap, I think, pre-season. Cardiff, I suppose, Lisa's just been on the text saying Cardiff are losing £3 million a month. And there'll be clubs with big debts who gambled in the Premier League who come down, and there'll be players.
Mark, when you look at that, you say they're losing £3 million a month, right? Take out our transfer profit on last year accounts that just came out, right?
Yeah,
we're in that ballpark. What was
that's
it?
What
10
I'm
million
saying. We can't 20, 2 million so a month. We're,
all right, 2.5. Right.
Yeah, what I'm saying is clubs can't sustain these losses. I think we're moving towards a salary cap. So I think there's going to be, some new normal.
There will be a salary cap.
How do we attract players then? You're right. How do we attract players to come here? Is it the manager?
There will be a salary cap.
Oh, no, it's recruitment.
Cap.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there will be a salary cap. But the salary cap applies to everyone. But it won't apply... It won't be brought in overnight, because it can't. You can't walk up to Calas tomorrow and say, right, we were paying you 25 grand a week. You're now on 14. You can't do that. That's illegal. So without his agreement, and he'd be a muppet to agree to it, and he ain't going to. They wouldn't even take a cut this year. They all took a deferral. So that's the issue. So I think there will be a salary cap, and I think that normally what they do with these things, they give a club a number, an amount of money. So if you want to, let's say you had 100 quid, you can play one bloke 97, and you can play all the rest, 3 quid between them if you can get away with it. And that's the way it happened. In rugby league, they're allowed two players on over the, or I think they were allowed two players on over the salary cap limit. So you get your salary cap and then two superstars, if you will.
Or you get a budget to spend, and it's up to you how you spend it, which is what we've been saying again in the past. Instead of having four players at $5,000 a week, costing you $20,000 a week in wages, you have, you know, two players at $7,500 a week and two players at $2,500 a week, which is experienced pros and young pros. Dave, you've made a point on here, which we talked about offline earlier today anyway. Skilled recruitment, not the scattergun that we've been doing. And then you also said that in Lee Johnson's latest coaching piece that he said, the best chance he had of getting promotion was 17-18 season. And then basically after that, it all went to rat shit when the new recruitment regime came into place. Is that right? That's what you're saying on that? That fundamentally, we were putting clubs in the bag was the term you used, wasn't it? Yeah,
I think just to kind of qualify what I said, I think Lee Johnson came out and said, basically, with the core of players that were left by him by the previous regimes of Cottrell, O'Driscoll and Burt, he had some really good players. He added a couple to it, and that was his best chance. And for me, I kind of found it quite damning that he said he couldn't basically replace the previous manager's players with good enough quality to kick on. I think it's quite a quite sad in a way. I'm just going to come back on Ian's thing about the salary cap. So the previous proposal, don't know whether that was the one the other week, but certainly the one they were knocking around in the closed season was 18 million salary budget on a 25-man squad, and that was basically a £720,000 per player, £720,000 per player. And that's actually the league average salary.
Yeah,
I think our average salary is about $15,000 now. I think I read that in the account, so somewhere around that mark. What they would do with any player who's currently contracted who earns more than that, they would cap it in terms of FFP reporting at that average salary. So if Callis was on $25,000, he'd actually be reportable at $14,000. And that was how they were going to do it until obviously he comes up for contract renewal or he goes somewhere else. And then obviously any new contracts have to fall within the cap. And that's why clubs like Sunderland, I believe in League One, are the team that have been quoted to say they've only got £500 per week budget left.
Yeah.
Because they're all capped at the maximum because they're all probably on more than the, was it $2,500 a week average that you're allowed in League One? So I think that's it. But yeah, go back. Sorry,
financial sleight of hand by the sound of it.
Yeah. So, but I just think in terms of recruitment, we've got to look differently at it, and that might be actually we only look for free transfers, or we only buy really young players really cheap and we develop them and go back a little bit to what we were doing. But it's going to be a weird scenario. It's very difficult to predict, I think.
It's going to be a weird few months.
We had Alakon and Mottison and people like that, didn't we? And it didn't work to an extent. Or Smodix, I suppose. We took punts with players at lower because league. Didn't come off.
Because there's no commitment, is there, in terms of the philosophy of playing and where they fit in. So, you know, and Dave's right. We are now suffering from the legacy of clubs in the bag.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of average players, or as Ian would call them, bang average players. I don't like the word bang average. I think bang average actually says things less than average, and I know that's another debate.
Guys, it's coming up to our sort of cut-off point. I said before this, but that's a really interesting debate on there. It flashed out a load of things, and it is going to be interesting. I think Tomo put on there that, again, it's the politicians' answers that Ashton gives. And as Tomo said, if if Ashton had come out and said over Liam Walsh, you say, Liam Walsh has been injured all season. He's very effective at League One level. We want to get a couple of games, see him perform and say he's on the verge of coming back. Let's have see him have half a dozen games in this league at this level before we commit to a contract, rather than trying to fudge it. And I think that's a valid point. I don't know how Liam Walsh feels about that, but I know if he doesn't sign a contract here, I'm sure Coventry City would be very happy to have him next season. Would we agree?
He won't, Dave, because they'd have to put him on the salary cap wages, and he'll be earning more than that here. I'll tell you that now. We paid £1 million for him.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Are we look forward to Saturday's game?
Well, look forward to Saturday very, very briefly. I mean, let's just sort of look at where we're at. I mean, I said before this game, four games coming up. Yeah. I said we needed 7 points from the four games to maintain the playoff challenge, not to be chasing it. Because anything less than that, if we ended up getting 5 points from the next four games, you know, you then start looking at points per game from the remaining, what would it be, 18 games. And once you're looking at 2 points per game and above, you're chasing. Yeah, so we got, I would call it, the nailed-on win tonight. That was the most winnable. For me, it goes win, draw, lose, win. Yeah, so that's Derby away, Brentford away, and finishing with a win against Cardiff. I mean, Dave, you know, do you agree with that 7 points? And do we need to be careful, though, against resurgent Wayne Rooney's Derby County at the weekend? What do you think?
Yeah, we've got to be wary against any team. We've seen a team like Huddersfield tonight absolutely dominate us for a large portion of the game. I think you're right, though. I think that little kind of like 7 points from four games keeps momentum, and it'll gain you a point or two over some time. Teams, it might lose you a point or two against other teams. At some point, you need a little run of two or three wins on the trot, because that gains you ground. But we're in touch somehow, to some extent. And we just need to keep it going. You know, I think a win on Saturday won't be easy. Would be quite handy. I think that would leave us in a nice little position there.
Yeah. Okay, that's your view. Ian, your thoughts? We got 3 points on the board from that 7-point requirement over four. Anything at Derby, resurgent Derby this week?
Yeah, I think we should go up there in with our away record and with the right shaped team. I think we should go and try and win it. I think we should look to play better than we did tonight. If I see us go up there with too narrow in midfield, I'll scream. One of the closing points, City won 3-1 at Swansea tonight. Joe Williams played 45 minutes and came through unscathed.
Which Dan put that up. Thanks to Dan. I meant to say earlier for that with Dan. So, Ian, with that news, do you think, you know, the pressure to bring him in, do you think they might put him on the bench or give him another?
No. I don't think you'll see Williams for another. I don't think you'll see Williams, Pato, or Setiakon, who, by the way, when we signed him, they said he can play either full-back position or he can play holding midfield. I don't think you'll see any of them for 2 weeks.
So they'll first be back in time for the cup tie then, yeah?
Possibly, I don't know whether, you know, they might get on that sneak on the bench for Brentford. I mean, Pato, Williams, and Williams have been training for a week. So yeah. I would think there's another game next week when Sessignon's going to play.
Yeah.
So if him and Williams and perhaps Pato get through that, because I think you're allowed to play two or three overage players, then, yeah, I think, you know, we're not going to get... we've got the position we're in, we've got a great chance.
Yeah.
Because, but the only sides that have won more games than us are the top four.
Yeah, so yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
That's got to say something. Now, it's a shame about Baker. I would have liked to have seen Big Baker back if we're going to play a back three, or if anything happened to, God forbid, anything happened to Mawson or Callas, I would have liked him to be available, but he's another one who's got injured in rehab. That's the second one. So I'd like to think, I mean, certainly we shouldn't be saying, oh, well, you know, let's go to the Derby and we, you know, if we can just get a point, wouldn't be a disaster.
No, but
I think we should go up there with the strikers we've got. We should go up there and try and win the game. Simple as that.
And finally from you, and finally, Mark, as Esther Ranson used to say with her programme in the 70s, finally, Mark, your thoughts on the Derby. A point up there. I'd take a point now, to be honest.
I think it's winnable. The good thing about Derby, like, they play possession football, don't score a lot of goals, sounds familiar. That'll give us a chance. And I think we've got to win that game to stay in touch, because we've got Brentford next Wednesday. Cardiff would be difficult. That could be a point. And then we're playing Watford and Reading on the 13th and 16th. So, you know, very tough run of fixtures.
When's the cup game then? Is that the 20th?
Wednesday the 10th of February.
Wednesday the 10th. And we don't know what channel that's going to be on there. I mean, it'll be live on one of the others, but there's a possibility of three. I can't see it.
But the cup game is after the Cardiff game, so we've got a batch of four matches in the league before the cup game, because it's midweek.
That'll be ideal for your Sessegnons and then Reading at Watford.
So no easy game.
Watford on the Saturday, Reading on the Tuesday, yeah.
And that's a way home, isn't it? Yeah, so really, we've got to get those 7 points from this batch of four. Yeah, because look at the next. You look at it in batches of four, that's probably maybe the best way to do it, rather than batches of 10 as we get to this.
Batches of one, Dave.
Take one game at a time. So Albuquerque said you should have been a manager, Dave. Waghorn's core flakes, yeah? And somebody said, fair play to the presenters, Virgin Broadband, holding out tonight. This is unheard of. Thank you, PBG90B2ACHS85. Our friend from Iran hasn't dialed in tonight to ask us what we think of his national government, so he's probably a political prisoner
now. Don't tell him your name, Pike.
Yeah. That's all right, Mr. Holden. Guys, good one again. Lots of lively debate. I mean, I think we've been joyous to an appropriate level. But as we said, we're celebrating the win, but we're also discussing the game. And there were some things in there that needed maybe that harsh approach. But everything to look forward to. Guys, have a great evening, what's left of it. And see you all again. And thanks for the listeners. Another high audience that we've got tonight as well. So appreciate all your contributions. High engagement score tonight as well. We've gone through 12,000 downloads as well, I think. So thanks again for that. We do publish our downloads on Podbeam, so you can see we're not lying about how many people are listening or downloading. That's the main thing. But thanks a lot for your support, my gang of three, and all the listeners. Thanks a lot for that. Enjoy the day.
Cheers. Good night, Dave. Good night, all.
Good night, chaps. Good night, Mary Ellen. Good night, Jim Bob.
Good night, Sue Ellen.